Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report. A big week, especially for New Hampshire, which we're gonna have live coverage for tomorrow on the network, of course. But before then, lots to get to, including very excited to have Jason Carter back in the studio. We're gonna do quite a bit of coverage of last night's Academy Awards. Why? Because I find it to be interesting and it's not about politics. So yay, I can't wait. So we're gonna be talking about that. We're also gonna have Erin Ryan is gonna be joining us once again. She's gonna be Skyping in to break down some of the big news of the day, including the run up to New Hampshire. Joe Biden launching an ad against Pete Buttigieg that is pretty brutal, and we're gonna get his response as well. But before we get to all that, let's start off with Nina Turner. In advance of New Hampshire, the New Hampshire polls, as well as the national polls, seem to be moving in the right direction for Bernie Sanders. He still has, if you take a look at this, you're gonna see not only is he doing well in those polls, but also who do you think has the best chance of winning in November? So this is for New Hampshire. He has gained 9 points since just about like 2 weeks ago, a little bit more than 2 weeks ago. Biden has dropped 16 points in that time, losing, getting towards half of his support in that metric. And considering how much conversation there's been about electability, who you believe is gonna win seems pretty important. And Iowa seems to have hurt Biden there, helped Sanders a little bit. But as these numbers are moving in the right direction for him, you can expect that the about a month long campaign against Bernie Sanders that we've seen from more media and political figures from the establishment be feeling more freed to attack him is continuing. So James Carville had an interview about Bernie Sanders, about how he says, let me show you one of the headlines. Former Clinton advisor says Sanders and Warren push stupid ideas in expletive heavy interview. To give you an idea of what it was like, I'm not gonna show you a whole bunch of it, but he talks that about how plans to provide free college is stupid, that not only will it not drive support for his candidacy, but in fact will cause a backlash against him, which is an interesting take. So yeah, the ideas are stupid. Also, he doesn't want to support Bernie Sanders because he doesn't want to be a part of a cult. And so that is James Carville. Now, not 100% from the James Carville thing, but this attack against Bernie Sanders that we've been seeing more and more of. Nina Turner, one of the top surrogates for Bernie Sanders, was on MSNBC just earlier today, and she was asked to respond to some of these attacks. Take a look at this.
The majority of Democrats who helped flip the House in 2018 were moderates. James Carville made the argument over the weekend that Senator Sanders isn't a Democrat, he's an ideologue. And we've got to get practical. If he is the candidate, he is not going to be able to help win over the Senate. And unless you have the Senate, if you've just got the White House, you ain't gonna get nothing done.
Stephanie, does practical mean that the 89 or so million people who are uninsured or underinsured in this country continue to suffer? Does being practical mean that we don't take steps in this country to deal with climate chaos and bring world leaders to bear? Does being practical mean that we continue to prop up a legal system that is unjust in every stretch of the imagination, that bears its weight down on black men and black women, and then by extension, if you are Hispanic or indigenous or poor? Does being practical mean that we don't say to the American people that you deserve better than what you are getting? That's not the kind of practicality we want. Does practical mean that you hold fundraisers and wine caves with Swarovski crystals with billionaires who want to control this system? Does practical mean we continue to go with the status quo while 500,000 people sleep on the streets at night? That's not practicality. So with all due respect to Mr. Carville, what the American people in this country need, they need somebody that is unabashed and that has the courage and the conviction to stand up for them and to call out the rigging of this system. And that candidate is Senator Bernie Sanders.
Okay, so probably so goes without saying that I absolutely love that. It was great. She should be running right now. But anyway, so look, the question that was set up from, I believe it's Stephanie Ruhle, was like sort of worded as, this is what James Carville is saying. I'm not sure when she says Bernie Sanders is not gonna help win the Senate, it wasn't clear if she was quoting James Carville there, if she was simply stating it. But it's out there now as an idea, and I'm gonna return to that in one sec. Before that though, I wanna go to one more bit of video. And this is again, a very weird framing coming from Stephanie Ruhle about Bernie Sanders supporters.
Senator Sanders supporters, what is their number one goal? Is it to start this revolution or is it to defeat Donald Trump? And I ask because There's often a lot of talk around, will those supporters get behind another candidate if it's not Senator Sanders?
Stephanie, why can't we have both? You know, that same argument was made in 2016.
And a lot of those people didn't vote for Clinton.
However, though, Stephanie, more of Senator Sanders' supporters supported Secretary Hillary Clinton than her supporters supported then Senator Barack Obama. So let's set the record straight. People do want to defeat President Donald Trump, but they also want to know that they're gonna have a fighter in the White House that's gonna take it all the way, that's gonna go ham on this system that has oppressed them. And so I reject, and so do the American people, the whole notion that you cannot say to a system that it must change and also push a dream and a vision that is bigger than what we have right now. Who wants somebody that's saying to the workaday people of this nation, I'm gonna run for office, but you only gonna get more of the same? That doesn't work. We're gonna win this stuff.
Okay, so that again was great. Again, goes without saying. So the idea that Bernie Sanders is a nominee means you can't win the Senate. And right there, well, I just want to know from Bernie Sanders supporters, do they want this revolution or do they want to beat Donald Trump? Like, I would love for one of these hosts just consider the possibility that those two things are not necessarily disconnected. And in particular, before you ask a question like that, and you add on to it the constant refrain of, will they say they will support another candidate if it's not Bernie Sanders? When Bernie Sanders himself has said that he will support the eventual candidate if it's not him more than everyone else in the field combined. If you're gonna ask that to the supporters of a candidate, doesn't it seem a little bit weird to ask it to the supporters of the candidate who got the most votes in Iowa, who's currently leading in New Hampshire, who 538 says has the best chance of clinching the nomination? Honestly, if you're gonna ask it to the supporters of any candidate, the leading candidate is who you're gonna ask it of, not of like Klobuchar supporters or Yang supporters or Warren supporters or anyone else who doesn't have nearly as good of a chance of winning, and thus those supporters are more likely to have to actually act on their beliefs. No. Ask it to Bernie Sanders, pretend that he's not winning. And in terms of her response was great, that those two things are connected, that the person who is most in the corner of working people, who brings in the most new voters, who clearly would help to take the Senate. When they say, do they actually care about beating Donald Trump or do they just want the revolution? Look, you know the recent polls over the past month that show that he regularly beats Donald Trump. But I want to go back further than that. I want to go back to literally 5 years of head-to-head polls between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Take a look at this graphic. This is Real Clear Politics. This is going back to October of 2015. There is like a 1 week span in there where they found a poll where Donald Trump beat Bernie Sanders. Aside from that, and sometimes with massive gaps between the two, for half a decade, he's been beating Donald Trump in these head-to-head polls. And I want to get that tattooed on my face and show up on CNN and MSNBC so that they can't avoid acknowledging that all of the empirical evidence that we have shows that not only is Bernie Sanders a good candidate electorally to go against Donald Trump, but all of the evidence shows that he's been regularly beating him year after year after year after year. And how can you continue to frame questions pretending not only that you don't understand that you haven't seen those numbers, but that the opposite necessarily must be true because you personally as a host don't support Bernie Sanders. That is insane at this late date that they're still doing that. We're not in the early part of the primary. He already won the popular vote in Iowa. He already looks like he's gonna win the popular vote in New Hampshire. He is very well placed for Super Tuesday as well. To keep pretending that he is some low tier outsider candidate that has no chance, that is absurd. And thankfully there are people like Nina Turner going out there and making that clear. Okay, with that, we are gonna take a short break. Lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Last night was the 2020 Academy Awards, which I am super into the past few years. You know what else I'm into? Having Jason Carter, entertainment journalist, in studio to break it down.
John, wow. Award season is done.
It is.
Award season's like January, the longest year of the year.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't even know January's month, but the 92nd Annual Academy Awards went off without a hitch. John, it was a weird vibe last night. I'm gonna keep it 100.
In what way?
Eminem surprising the world. It's a great song.
Oh.
But it was like, okay, Academy, we're doing this. Eminem. But I do think that there was.
Wait, really fast. I think, was it Idina Menzel they went to? And she was just like, nobody knew. I get it. He had this song. It was big in the movie, but it was like a long time ago. It was like 2003.
17 years ago, yeah. And then to. They cut to commercial, they come back, and then there's Eminem.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, surprise. Opening performance and opening monologue and opening activity from Janelle Monáe was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible for her to not only just have a mashup of so many Oscar-nominated songs that year, but to also say, I am a queer black actress on the Academy Awards stage. It was a powerful moment for people of the LGBTQ plus community. So there was a lot going on last night. Again, I still think it was a weird vibe. People tried to get political.
Of course they did.
But
really fast on that, you know what I love? And I hesitate to insult Eminem. I don't want him to like make a song about me or whatever, but you know, it's weird that like, so Janelle Monáe had her performance and later on Eminem had his performance and they're both performances, but like, he's rapping and doing this. And she was like, she did like three costume changes as she sung and danced around the stage. Like it reminds me of the Super Bowl show where it's like, Jennifer Lopez is like dancing upside down on guys while singing. And then they cut to like these like four guys in red jumpsuits that are like, yeah, and I'm like, wow, we have really different standards for different people.
Well, and the fact that the Academy allowed Eminem to perform that song with, I mean, the Academy Awards are the pinnacle. They are the Mercedes, the zenith of award shows. So there's a certain kind of level of execution and appearance. I would think you would want your performance to have, listen, Eminem.
Some performance?
Right, yeah. Do what you want, Em, but it was just an awkward, surprising and kind of cool moment in the Academy Awards last night. So you gotta lose yourself. It's a great song.
It's a great song.
Great song.
He looked so different with facial hair.
I know.
I've never seen that before.
But he hasn't aged though.
No, he looks the same as 17 years ago.
That's true. They say black don't crack, Eminem don't crack.
Yeah, yeah. More appropriation from Eminem. Okay, so look, there's a lot that we want to talk about. Why don't we launch into some of the awards and we can touch on a bunch of stuff in there. So first, Best Supporting Actress shocked the nation by going to Laura Dern. I say that because apparently everybody expected it. What did you think about that?
I thought it was well-deserved. Again, her role as Nora Fanshawe in Marriage Story was incredible, much like her role as Renata Klein in Big Little Lies. Similar, but she's same female, alpha female, very powerful, just super ball buster. She is Hollywood royalty. And again, the Academy Awards, I would like to think, or I'm pretty sure are, people campaign to win these awards.
Yes.
She went to all the luncheons, she's a favorite. And her performance was there.
It was a good performance.
It was a great performance. Was it the best in Marriage Story? No, and we're gonna talk about who should have got awarded for Marriage Story in just a few, but I'm glad she finally won. From the Star Wars movies to everything she's done.
Jurassic Park back in
the day. Exactly. Yeah. Laura Dern is a mainstay, fantastic actress, well deserved.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that was a bit like I this was the first Florence Pugh movie I've seen, and I thought she was really good in Little Women. But for me especially, I thought Scarlett Johansson was so good in Jojo Rabbit. In very little time.
Yes,
she was great.
Again, teaming back up with Taika Waititi for that movie, right? Mm-hmm. Taking her from Marvel and putting her into this dark comedy that has some very dark subject matter. Her death in the movie, Did it not? I mean, I'm sorry.
It's been out for 6 months or whatever.
Not to spoil it on TYT, but I thought she was better in that than in Marriage Story.
I agree.
Because you had a departure for Scarlett. It really showed her acting chops. And when she did interviews in regards to this movie, I think she did an interview with Elle Magazine where she was completely stripped down, was very visceral. Mm-hmm. You saw a different side of Scarlett that wasn't the glam and polished and beautiful Scarlett that we come to love.
Yeah.
She was very raw. And I think this was a performance I thought she would have taken the Oscar for.
I was hoping. But also, I think we should just briefly, and by the way, if you haven't seen Jojo Rabbit, see Jojo Rabbit. It's maybe like my third favorite
incredible
movie last
year.
But by the way, there wasn't, she had been nommed in other awards shows, mm-hmm. but Jennifer Lopez not getting a nomination there. I think that Margot Robbie was really good, but I probably would have put in Jennifer Lopez instead of Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie's character of Caleb Pospisil in Bombshell was made up, it was fictional, mm-hmm. right? So I thought she did a great job in that. But here we have Jennifer Lopez, who has been so many things since we've mm-hmm. come to love her since 1997, right?
Yeah.
No, let's take it back. So she was a fly girl in Living Color. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this evolution of J-Lo as an entrepreneur, a musician, an entertainer. And then now to have this role in Hustlers as Ramona, that you thought, well, her body looks incredible. Not to objectify Jennifer, but come on. It's a part of the performance in
this movie.
But just how she committed to that role. Mm-hmm. And then for it to not even get a showing at the Academy Awards, because mm-hmm. there was a big conversation, J-Lo's gonna take the Golden Globe, could she have an Oscar nom? None of that happened. Well, she did get the Golden Globe nomination. So,
yes, she did, nomination at least.
Yeah, but
yeah. The only thing that makes me feel a little bit better about it is that she's likely to have a very good second actor in her life since she's now de-aging year by year. So that's good for her.
Alien, she's an alien.
Exactly.
Her Angela Bassett, what are they drinking? What's in the water?
Exactly. Best Supporting Actor went to Brad Pitt. I was happy to see that. He was like he was the best part of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for me.
But that great of a film. I'm sorry, it was not that great of a film. It's Quentin Tarantino's penultimate. He says he's only gonna do 10 films mm-hmm. in his career. That was the penultimate one.
I don't believe him.
Getting him and LDC, Brad Pitt and LDC, Leonardo DiCaprio mm-hmm. on a screen together was goals. The conversation on that movie before it even dropped was major. I think Brad Pitt, much like actors like Denzel Washington, Tom Hanks, there comes a time when you have to give them the Oscar. Mm-hmm. And he has an Oscar already.
He was good in this.
Right, he was great. He won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave as a producer.
Yes.
Best Picture.
But no acting.
Right, a performance.
Other nominations, I believe, but no
yeah.
other.
Yeah. He was good in this. I think, sure. It could anyone in this category for Best Supporting Actor mm-hmm. could have taken home the Oscar, but I'm glad it went to Brad as well.
Yeah.
No hate, no shame.
Okay, Best Director, Bong Joon-ho.
Duh.
First of four Oscars.
Historic.
I put it down on my ballot.
I saw
it. I did not expect that he would get it.
Right.
I think for all four that they got, I put him down. And I didn't expect, I thought maybe they'd get one.
Yeah.
I was very excited. And his speeches just got better throughout the night.
It did. John actually screenshotted your ballot from Instagram because it was intense and incredible.
I did not do well.
But he deserved to win. That movie, so nuanced. Mm-hmm. Foreign language, international foreign film, they've taken away mm-hmm. foreign language film, right? Mm-hmm. Winning, making history. I think that also leans on a huge light shining on representation again, mm-hmm. because we had
Which they returned to from the beginning and on.
Yes. Crazy Rich Asians was that conversation when that movie was out. We have this, which was a stellar piece of work. And I think it's safe to say that the Academy is taking notice. Mm-hmm. They, you know, remember Oscars So White?
Yeah.
All these movements that were
the Green Book winning.
Yeah.
That was
maybe they're getting it together.
Maybe. I think what was interesting was the people setting up the show definitely were trying. How much the people who choose the nominees and select the nominees were
different
trying.
Different conversation.
That's a different conversation. But the show was definitely trying to be better.
Right. Right.
I think. Okay, so really fast, I mean, we have to acknowledge that it did also win Best Picture. So
yeah.
Parasite out of 10, I didn't think it was going to. I chose it because I wanted it to. It was like a heart choice. But I thought that Joker probably would pull it out.
Joker.
Or 1917, which
right,
won because, three Oscars
exactly.
already.
Exactly. And 1917,
point.
As we talked about before, is one of those movies that the Academy loves to give
yes.
awards to. Sprawling, huge, cinematic masterpiece, great director, the storyline, war always does well at
yeah.
the Oscars. But, you know, sometimes things that are antithetical to that do well as well. Joker was a great movie in that one, Joaquin is brilliant.
Two, best actor, we should know.
Of course.
He got.
Absolutely. And you have a heralded, fabled DC comic villain mm-hmm. that we've had somewhat origin stories in the past, but we got a deeper, more emotional, I can't even articulate how different this was for that story. I mean, Todd Phillips, who was the director of the movie, did a fantastic job of telling the story of Joker, of the Joker, from not of him being kooky and crazy with antics like we've seen in the Tim Burton Batmans or in the or any of the Christopher Nolan movies. So for it to win Best Actor for Joaquin Phoenix and not win Best Picture, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, we're gonna talk about Joaquin Phoenix's acceptance speech, which was interesting. I liked his performance. It was not my favorite movie of the year. It was like top five,
not mine
or something like that. Very glad that it went to Parasite. Really fast, because we did mention Joaquin. Let's also mention that Best Actress did go to Renee Zellweger, which is, I did not choose it, even though everybody was saying it was gonna happen. So
but she won. She won, John. And I tweeted last night, not to cut you off, that Renee Zellweger is the glaring example of your comeback is exponentially greater than the setback. For years, people counted Renee Zellweger out. She won in 2003 for Cold Mountain. She even says, wow, 17 years, good to see you guys again.
Yeah.
Right? Even won the Golden Globe as well for the same role. And it was just great to see her speeches because they were so humble. Her speech at the Golden Globes was, my agents, my team said, Renee, it's not about winning these awards, it's about doing the work. Brad Pitt also says, I didn't start winning until I just started being grateful and loving what I did. And that's when the accolades come. She was great in Judy, embodied Judy. Judy Garland never won an Oscar. So she was championing this win for her and also for just anyone who was an underdog that's finally coming out on top. She deserved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was
more torn. I didn't have a clear choice. I thought Saoirse Ronan was good in Little Women. I wasn't sure. I liked Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story, but I didn't have like a clear pick there.
And Cynthia Erivo. Harriet was a missed opportunity to have a great piece of cinema, I thought. I thought the music was great. I think Cynthia Erivo is an exquisite actress, but that wasn't the movie that Cynthia was gonna win for.
That's interesting, yeah. And by the way, if you wanna see more of her, The Outsider in HBO is fantastic, and I think she's the highlight of it so far. So take a look at that too.
Honorable mention to Charlize though, but Transformations. The Academy loves a transformation.
That's true. And I think they won for makeup and hairstyles.
Yes.
That was an amazing, they really nailed those looks. And
nailed
I love
it.
Some of the shout outs to Charlize that she got for putting together the movie. Anyway, we are gonna take a short break. More to get to after this. Last night at the Oscars, you of course had some great acceptance speeches, and it is the modern Oscars, so there were invocations to politics.
Mm-hmm.
Want to just touch on a couple very fast. Brad Pitt said, "They told me I only have 45 seconds up here, which is 45 seconds more than the Senate gave John Bolton this week. I'm thinking maybe Quentin Tarantino does a movie about it. In the end, the adults do the right thing." No, in the end, like Marines storm the White House, shoot everybody there, probably.
And credits, right?
Credits. Yeah.
Of course. Well, but John, stars are what? American citizens as well. People think the stars are vapid, vacuous, have no clue of what's going on in the world, but they absolutely do. They are more, I think they're becoming staunchly more activated than they've ever been before. So Brad Pitt, I wonder what he was thinking about sitting in his chair. He thought, I could think, or I could do this. You know what I mean? And I'm glad he did that. He also thinks
it was very brief too. Like it was only the first line, really.
And it didn't seem forced. It didn't seem inauthentic. It just felt like, this is how I feel. Keep it pushing.
Yeah. And then he talked about the work and his evolution, all that. And it looked like he was close to tears actually at one point. Now, very briefly, Joaquin Phoenix has had some big speeches throughout award season because he's been recognized so much for Joker. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he talked about championing different causes. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. He talked about animal rights at length. He says, "We feel entitled to artificially inseminate a cow and steal her baby, even though her cries of anguish are unmistakable. Then we take her milk that's intended for her calf and we put it in our coffee and our cereal."
I'm never eating Honey Nut Cheerios ever again. Thank you, Joaquin Phoenix. However, he at the Golden Globes, he talked about plant sustainability because the HFPA was all plant-based that night, right?
Yes.
And then tonight, or last night rather, he talked about animal rights, which is great. And also he touched on cancel culture.
Yes.
Which
he talked about his own personal issues in the past.
Joaquin Phoenix was awkwardly fascinating last night in a great actor. He deserved to win for Joker. And then ending with words of wisdom from his late brother River. I mean, does it get more nuanced than that, John? Mm-hmm. It doesn't. So he's awkward.
So what did you think about the whole thing about, he says, I've been a scoundrel all my life. I've been selfish. I've been cruel at times, hard to work with. And I'm grateful that so many of you in this room have given me a second chance. I think that's when we're at our best, when we support each other, not when we cancel each other out for our past mistakes, but when we help each other to grow.
He's right. I mean, he's right. Forgiveness. I'm all into the law of attraction in the universe. When you have to let go to grow, right? You have to forgive. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, maybe he's older in age. Of course, he's getting up there. Not really, but I mean, he's older than he was when probably he was a scoundrel and doing all those egregious things he claims to have done. So I agree with that. I think that is a message that anyone can take to heart and push forward in their own life. And for someone as I would say unique and as eccentric as Joaquin Phoenix to have those words, I'm sure they resonated with many. So I mean, what better place than to say that than at the Oscars in a room full of somewhat vapid people?
Yeah, and look, he was, his eccentricity came through a little bit in the speech too. Like, you got kind of a vibe of he's like, you know, I got a little bit of a jokerish vibe from it, is what I'm saying. But great actor, and I like most of the message. I know that there's gonna be some pushback. Like, you know, obviously he sort of tied in the fight for, you know, animal rights in with other struggles. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people are not big fans of that, basically, of likening that struggle to other historic struggles.
Well, of course, but like Brett Ehrlich says, people love to masturbate, right? They love to be mad about something. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have to take things at face value. And again, not focus on the comparison, but just in the message in itself. It's transcendent, John. Mm-hmm. It goes to any struggle. You can basically, what Joaquin was saying, don't be a crappy person. Mm-hmm. Do better. The late Dr. Maya Angelou says, when you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
And so that was at the core of what Joaquin was trying to say.
I thought you were gonna say, as Maya Angelou said, don't be a crappy person. I didn't read that one. Yes. And it was a good speech. Others as well. There was you know, Brie Larson and Sigourney Weaver, Gal Gadot, their thing about you know, the continuing struggle of women in Hollywood. Sure. There were a number of, I don't wanna not acknowledge those at all, but we are running late on time. But thank you so much for joining us. Always good to have you here.
Of course, man. Of course.
Let's do this for the next Oscars as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. Lots more to get to. Stick around. Joining us now to break down some of the big news of the day, Aaron Ryan, host of the Hysteria podcast. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you on. How would you like to start off with the stupidest news of the past week or so?
Almost always. Let's do it.
Let's do that. Okay. So Donald Trump is responding now to a photo that went viral of him that does not necessarily portray him in the best light. You've probably seen this going around. Let's put it up there. You see, Donald Trump returns to the White House from Charlotte, North Carolina. That is a photo of him walking either to or from a helicopter. And there are obviously a few issues there. We're gonna have his response in just 1 second. But what did you initially think when you saw this sort of new look at the president?
You know, it's funny because he's obviously somebody who has taken a lot of effort to disguise how he really looks. And the way that he's done it is really puzzling because it's not a very attractive disguise. But I'm always shocked a little bit when I see the layers peeled back. Like, I was really shocked at how pale he is and how much of a contrast the color of makeup that he's using is from his real skin color. Mm-hmm. He's a very weird man. And it was driving home the point that that's a way that a very weird man would choose to present himself to the world.
Yeah, and look, I'm gonna read his response in just a second, but I wanna make clear what probably everybody already understands as context for this. And this is not by any means going to placate everyone. But Donald Trump is a guy who has turned as much of politics into show business as anyone before him. He chooses people for important positions based exclusively on how they look. He fires women because they're too short. He doesn't hire men because they have mustaches. He talks about central casting. And of course, there's no one in public life over the past 30 years that has attacked people for their physical appearance, especially and most brutally women, than Donald Trump. And so that doesn't make it right. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. But we live in crazy times and I'm going crazy. So let's have his response. He said to this photo, more fake news. This was photoshopped, obviously. But the wind was strong and the hair looks good. Anything to demean. Let's just be very clear, because the term fake news is thrown around a lot these days. So here's another photo from the same photo shoot. It's not been photoshopped. That's just what a person like him looks like. So what do you think?
I mean, I think you're exactly right. I'm a little bit less hesitant to pile on to him because of his looks, because I think turnabout is fair play. And I think that men like him rarely have people stand up to them and tell them how it feels, show them how it feels to have that sort of judgment passed on them all the time. So I think as long as Donald Trump has been a person who is completely unapologetic about referring to women as fat pigs, and as long as he holds them to beauty pageant standards, I don't think it's unfair at all for somebody to point out that he is somebody who is extremely deviant from the norm of what we would consider physically attractive. And I think the fact that he, one thing I think is funny about him is that he thinks that he looks like how, you know, those kind of fandom art paintings of him look. Like in his mind, he thinks that he looks like that. And there's something that feels good about having to hold something up and be like, no, this is how you look. Mm-hmm. This is reality. And I don't know if it'll ever get through his head, but the idea of it one day getting through his head because somebody pointed it out to him feels good. I don't know if it's great long term, but it feels good in the short term.
Yeah, and let me just round out the whole his history thing, that he's continuing to do this into the present day. Like his attacks against Mike Bloomberg are about his height. His attacks against Adam Schiff are about his pencil neck. The nervous Nancy thing is like a critique of her physical behavior while she's speaking. Like, look, I don't want us all to be dragged down to the mud and stay there forever. And I assume that pointing out to him that this is the world he is creating, he's probably not going to learn a significant lesson from that. But this is the reality. This is our president and how he appears. And so I think it's acceptable to at least briefly mention that.
Right. I also think that there are people who are not beyond hope, people who might fall into the trap of feeling like they are entitled to judge women the way that Donald Trump judges women because he sets a terrible example. And I would think that maybe us kind of piling on and being like, no, actually, you look like you have some sort of a vitamin deficiency, but you've done it with makeup. I think that us pointing it out might show people who feel tempted to engage in that behavior in the way that Donald Trump does, that they're going to get it back. So it might be too late for him, but there might be some baby Trump out there who sees this and thinks, oh, you know what? That's not a really good way to behave unless I want it turned back on me.
You know what? Fingers crossed. I hope you're right on that. Okay, with that, why don't we turn to something else related to Trump. Heading into an election year, Donald Trump is crafting his budget. And you would think, since he is going to be running for re-election, whatever he chooses to put in there is what he thinks will be a winning strategy. In particular, because the budget is unlikely to pass in the form he initially puts out. So it is, to some extent, mainly a symbol of his priorities. And I believe that we can learn a lot from this. So in this upcoming budget, he increases military spending by a small amount, 0.3%, up to $740.5 billion. Let's just pause for 1 second. We spend $740 billion for 1 year of our military. That is amazing.
How many school lunches is that? That's my question.
Like at least a dozen. At least a dozen.
At least a dozen. Who knows what a banana costs? $10? Yeah, that was something that really struck out to me. It also has been characterized as a cruel budget because Donald Trump is a cruel person. One thing that kind of, it's not funny because it is full of lies. It features like the $800 billion slashed from public benefits like Medicaid, Social Security. It also proposes slashing education while increasing the budget for NASA. And as I was thinking of all of this together, my first thought was, this is a budget that reflects a desire to entrench the current hierarchy. It reflects a desire to keep people who are poor, poor, to keep people who are rich, rich. And, you know, I was thinking, like, how are we giving all this money to NASA and slashing money to education? Where are we going to get all of our astronauts? And it's going to be from people who can afford education. It's about entrenching the way that things are currently and making it impossible for any class to move up.
Yeah. Let's run through a couple of other significant cuts. So the EPA is going to be cut by 26%. which is amazing. Mm-hmm. We're taking the climate crisis seriously here in America.
Yeah.
Foreign aid by 21%, the Department of Housing and Urban Development by 15%. And right in time for coronavirus season, the CDC is slated to lose 9% of its budget. And then importantly too, they're talking about $130 billion effectively in cuts to Medicare through changing prescription drug prices, $292 to cuts for things like work requirements for Medicaid and SNAP, $70 billion in cuts for involving federal disability benefits. So he's entering into this election season saying, no, your Social Security, your Medicare, your Medicaid, we're cutting those. We're cutting those to the bone. The EPA too. I mean, we got to fund these tax cuts, a little bit more for the military. His priorities couldn't be clearer.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I also noticed that there was a proposed cut in foreign aid and a bump, small bump, but a bump nonetheless in the budget of ICE. So we want to, I guess, promote conditions that would make people want to leave their countries and then prosecute them when they try to leave. That's another kind of cruel aspect of this whole thing. It is a puzzling budget, especially because it's like free PR. A president can put out basically a wish list and say they want, you know, every house gets a fairy that cleans the bathroom every week. But you know, he didn't take that opportunity. He took the opportunity to tell us that what he wants is for rich people to stay rich, poor people to stay poor, people in other countries to stay in those countries, and us to cut off the aid that helps the people that live there. It's really egregious, but I think that the Democrats and people who are running against the president can take this as a kind of a gift. Because when they ran against proposed cuts to public programs in 2018, they won big. Yeah. And it seems like a pretty big mistake for Donald Trump to make in an election year.
I agree. It's a bold strategy. We'll see if it works out for him. Aaron, stick around. We're going to have you for one more block. Everybody home. We'll be right back after this. Joe Biden is dueling it out in that centrist lane of the Democratic primary against Pete Buttigieg. And in his most recent ad, it's clear he's taking the threat very seriously. Take a look.
Barack Obama called Joe Biden
best vice president America's ever had.
But Pete Buttigieg doesn't think much of the vice president's record. Let's compare. When President Obama called on him, Joe Biden helped lead the passage of the Affordable Care Act, which gave health care to 20 million people. And when parkgoers called on Pete Buttigieg, he installed decorative lights under bridges, giving citizens of South Bend colorfully illuminated rivers. Both Vice President Biden and former Mayor Buttigieg have taken on tough fights. Under threat of a nuclear Iran, Joe Biden helped to negotiate the Iran deal. And under threat of disappearing pets, Buttigieg negotiated lighter licensing regulations on pet chip scanners. Despite pressure from the NRA, Joe Biden passed the assault weapons ban through Congress. Then he passed the Violence Against Women Act. And even when public pressure mounted against him, former Mayor Pete fired the first African-American police chief of South Bend. And then he forced out the African-American fire chief too.
Okay, Aaron, you're back. Glad to have you here. What did you think about that ad?
Oh, well, you know, I went to school in South Bend. I went to Notre Dame, and those lights sound pretty cool. I'm just going to go ahead and say those lights sound cool. The rivers were boring when I went there, so yeah. Thank you, Mayor Pete. Here's the thing. I think that if Joe Biden wanted to beat Pete Buttigieg, he should have taken him more seriously earlier on. This is something that reads to me like too little too late, and it's kind of panicky. The ad is sort of funny, although I think that some of the details that are pointed out as like Mayor Pete's little accomplishments seem like the accomplishments of a person who actually cared about people in the town where he was living, with the exception of the firing of people who shouldn't be fired. But you know, pet chip scanners and trying to make life more pleasant is not something that we should begrudge any city official for trying to do. But I do think that Pete Buttigieg is a lot more formidable in this race than Joe Biden gave him credit for. And I'm not sure who this ad is for or who it's going to convince.
Yeah, there's the it might successfully paint Mayor Pete as an unserious person with no experiences relevant to being president. Or it might strike people as below Biden to be like punching a mayor for doing what mayors do, kind of. Like, yes, he pointed out some of the actual scandals, but a lot of it is just, it's sort of making light of local politics in a way that could maybe backfire.
Right, that stuff matters. If you have a pet and you lose your pet, that's terrible. And you want someone to help you get it back. So that seemed a little bit strange. Also, you know, Amy Klobuchar is a lot better at picking on Pete Buttigieg than Joe Biden is, and this ad kind of showcased that fact as well.
Exactly. So look, I agree that it might be too little too late for him. I want to walk you through another thing that again is problematic for Joe Biden at this late hour. So in an exchange that was widely shared on social media, 21-year-old Georgia college student Madison Moore asked Biden to explain his poor performance in the Iowa caucus. Biden replied, "It's a good question. Have you ever been to a caucus?" The student nodded. And then Biden said, "No, you haven't. You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier." Now, apparently that is a reference to a John Wayne movie, but woo, that is something.
Look, if you're gonna make references to college kids, make references for things that existed while they were alive. I think that's a pretty good standard. If you're gonna toss a little, I don't know, frontier gibberish at somebody, it should be like, John Wayne is not something that college kids are fluent in. It's a weird thing. I mean, it was a legitimate question and it was a weird deflection on Joe Biden's part. I found the whole thing just very, very strange. And I wish it would stop. I want to live in a world where this all is no longer happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, and look, if it was just this one thing, and yes, I'm sure it's a joke or whatever, but Biden has regularly lashed out at people for asking him questions. And it's sort of one thing as the front runner to be doing that. But when you just had like a fourth place showing in Iowa, and now like looking at least in this most recent Emerson poll, he's currently in fifth below Sanders, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and Warren, getting just 10% of the vote. Like to be this aggressive to me feels entitled when you need to be like giving off the idea that you don't expect that you're going to win, but that you want to fight for it.
Yeah, but I think his entitlement is understandable given the political press and the environment that those people have created. Like we rely way too heavily on polls as though they're gospel, and we know that there's no perfect way to conduct a poll that actually reflects the will of the people. They also, you know, the public press likes to put forth this idea that the moderate candidate is somebody that people are going to want because it is what the public press wants. It makes their jobs easier to have somebody predictable in office. It makes their jobs easier to have somebody who's going to do things the way that they've already been done. So I don't blame Joe Biden for expecting to waltz into the nomination because I think the political press has furthered that myth based on polls. It's just this like really bad feedback loop that now we're in a place where we have Joe Biden who doesn't understand what's going on, who's reacting really negatively. And to the public and to the average voter and to somebody who isn't a centrist or who isn't a member of the Beltway political press, it's all very off-putting.
Yeah.
And that's why I sort of was making the jokey comment earlier about how I just want this all to be done because it seems like Joe Biden has done a lot in his public life. That's true. And it's really unfortunate to watch him in this, what might be his last run at public office, really kind of tear down some of the goodwill that he's built up over his decades of public service.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate final act possibly. Aaron, it's always great to have you on the show. Could you tell people just a little bit about your podcast?
Yeah, it's called Hysteria. It's a tongue-in-cheek name. It's called Hysteria because it's all women. We all get together every week and we talk about a little bit of politics, a little bit of news of the day, a little bit of zeitgeisty issues that women tend to talk about. It's all of the cast members are women, but it's for everybody. And so, you know, tune in. We have Francesca Fiorentini on every once in a while. She's a friend of the Young Turks as well. And so it's always a fun conversation. It's always lively. And my other panelists are super funny. So we have a great job doing it, or we have a great time doing it.
Awesome. Aaron, as always, pleasure talking to you. Love your perspective. Thank you for joining
us. Thanks for having me.
And everybody at home, thank you so much for watching. Tomorrow's obviously a massive day politically. Like we've been sort of sketching out what Biden might need to do to survive what's gonna happen tomorrow. But tomorrow you get to actually see it happen to him. So that should be pretty exciting. We're gonna be doing live coverage for that. And you know what? You're gonna wanna stay tuned for the rest of the week too, because you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we might get the results from New Hampshire. So that'll be an exciting bit of news for you as well. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Go see Parasite. See you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.